You're listening to ABC Radio Melbourne.
Chocolate is arguably one of the most beloved food items in the world. I think a close second would probably be chips, but I think chocolate still would take the number one spot. But did you know that there was a World Chocolate Day? In my opinion, I would have thought that every day is Chocolate Day, but apparently not. It's July 7th. And here to talk about all chocolate things related, it's Danny Valente, writer, eater and cook. Danny, shouldn't every day be Chocolate Day?
I think every day is Chocolate Day, but you know how sometimes you just need an extra little reminder of the important things in life? So I think that's what World Chocolate Day is all about.
Well, if we're doing World Chocolate Day, we might as well do World Oxygen Day, because just once a day to remind us the importance of breathing in.
Yes, I'm so with you. I mean, I think we need oxygen so that we can eat chocolate, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they're right. Definitely related.
It's the only reason I go working out, is just to eat more chocolate.
Well, I only run to eat.
Yeah.
Isn't that why everyone runs?
So World Chocolate Day is July 7th. Which is this Sunday.
Apparently. I don't know who makes up these days. I don't think the UN ratified it or anything like that. But if anyone wants to call it World Chocolate Day, then I'm going to come to the party and eat the chocolate.
So what are people doing for World Chocolate Day? How long has this been going for, as far as you know?
I don't know.
I believe it's been about 10 years maybe it's been around.
Okay.
But it probably got more mainstream knowledge in the last 3-4 years.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it always seems to be some kind of day. It's like if it's not burrito day, it's cheese day. And if it's not cheese day, it's chocolate day. And if it's not chocolate day, it's toast day. But that's okay because it's great to celebrate all the different foods that we can eat.
Yeah. And so do you think that what are people doing to celebrate World Chocolate Day?
Look, I know like Melbourne chocolatier Coco Black has got a special croissant that they're doing that's stuffed with pistachio and chocolate. So I'm all about that. That sounds great. But I think, you know, everyone can just get on board with World Chocolate Day at home. So make some brownies, have a hot chocolate, put some don't be alarmed, but put some chocolate in your cheese toastie.
Hang on. Jeez, my God. I love when you come in and you just put my head in a spin. What on earth are you talking about when you say a cheese toastie with chocolate in there?
Look, don't hate it till you've tried it.
No, I'm not hating it. My mind's just blown up because I do love a cheese toastie and I do love chocolate. Never thought about the merge.
Yeah, look, I don't think it's something you'd want to do every day, but I think for World Chocolate Day, you can give it a go. It's something that I tried when I was a kid and every now and again, I have to dip back in. You know how there's a cheese fondue and there's a chocolate fondue? You know, I think there's sometimes they just want to get together and, to have a bit
like
of a swirl. And there is like a cream cheese and chocolate brownie, which, you know, you do see in some cafes around town or you might make one yourself. So I think there is this concept of that sort of savouriness and the sweetness of chocolate.
We merge cheese with like figs and you know, sort of sweeter fruits. So why not bring chocolate into the mix?
I agree. I mean, I think it's worth trying, especially on World Chocolate Day.
Yeah, fair enough. And is there any particular cheese that you think that would go better with chocolate?
Something that's going to melt. So, I mean, don't go for the top line cheese, but you know,
brie.
Ooh, no, I'd go more for your Gruyere, your cheddar, something that's got a little bit more structure, a little bit more bite.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so given it, you're saying because it's World Chocolate Day that we should be encouraging people to have more chocolate in there, to be a bit more experimental with it. Is there a limit to it? Do you think I should try like my dim sum with chocolate sauce or something like that?
Well, I don't. I really don't think you should do that.
I'm trying to be experimental here.
Yeah, I think even though we're all about the chocolate, I think you can still go too far. But there are some really good savory ways of trying chocolate. So, you know, like chocolate started as a savory drink in Mexico.
Is that real?
Yeah. So it didn't start sweet. So it is really traditional in a Mexican mole, which is basically a Mexican sauce, like a complex sauce with a whole bunch of different chilies. It is traditional to put an unsweetened chocolate into that. So, you know, I don't think it wants to be with a dim sum, but I could be wrong. I mean, there's lots of food adventures in our futures.
Look, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be experimental enough to put a dim sum and a chocolate together. But so where was the first notice? Like, where have we first seen chocolate becoming a sweet tooth favorite?
When it went over to Europe after the Spanish came to the Americas and it traveled back and then it turned from a drink to a solid. So yeah, certainly like 17th, 18th century England and Spain, France around those times, it became it was highly prestigious, really expensive. It wasn't an everyday food at all. So I'm sure they didn't have World Chocolate Day then.
No, definitely didn't. But it feels like it's definitely, I mean, since we've gone sweet, I didn't even know that it started off as savory, because now I've noticed more people seem to be putting chili in their chocolate and selling it as chili chocolate.
Well, that goes, I mean, that goes back to chocolate's heritage. So yeah, so the mixing of spices and chocolate is definitely probably more traditional than, you know, a chocolate bar.
The chocolate bar itself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We have a text in that here from Brian on the line, 0437-774-774, that says, is dark chocolate good for you? Better than milk or white chocolate? The darker the chocolate, the better for you? Question mark. I don't know, Danny. Is that the area we want to talk about? Right now, I feel like we're appreciating chocolate in its entirety.
Definitely. I think, look, there are lots of studies, and I only read the studies that say dark chocolate is good for you, just like I only read the studies that say red wine is good for you. So, yes, dark chocolate is definitely good for you. I am a chocolate doctor here on the airwaves right now. I think the reason that people say dark chocolate is better for you than milk or white chocolate is simply because of the lower sugar content. So it's got lower sugar content, lower dairy content. It's just more chocolate than the other types of chocolate.
So, understood.
Yeah, so I think all chocolate is good for us, but dark chocolate is just more concentrated chocolate.
Because there's less of the sugar.
Less of the other stuff that extends it out, exactly.
And so what about you personally? What are your plans for World Chocolate Day?
I'm going to make brownies, and I've been practicing them. So if anyone wants a great brownie recipe, it's on my website.
It's dannyvalant.com.
Yep. And I'm going to be having a mocha. So I'll be having – I need to have a coffee, but I'll put a bit of chocolate in it. I think that'll be good.
And you reckon this is something you're doing specifically because it's World Chocolate Day as opposed
to...
No. Yeah, this is what I'm trying to get at. I love that you are framing it as it's an excuse to do it. But
no,
really,
it's just that you can talk about it on World Chocolate Day. Maybe it's just permission to talk about the chocolate that you eat every day.
Plus, as you were saying before, it's just, you know, when we were talking off air, that it's nice to have another reason to talk about chocolate. We don't have to just wait till Easter.
I know, it's such a long time between Easter egg. From Easter egg to Easter egg is such a long time. So it's good to have another day to talk about chocolate. So, yeah, I think it's great. There are all kinds of fun things you can do with chocolate. In fact, in a couple of weeks, I'm hosting a truffle dinner, and we're mixing truffles with chocolate.
Yeah, right. So, and how does that work?
So it's a dessert, but it's got a truffle element with hot chocolate. So, yeah, also check my website. Join me, eat truffles and eat chocolate. That'll be fun. Check my website for tickets.
Look, I said this many times, so every time you've had in here, where there's, like, I'm not a very good cook. I don't really cook well, but I do feel like I want to be part of this whole World Chocolate Day celebration. So short of just going to the supermarket and buying some, you know, chocolate and just eating it by myself, what else? What can I do that will make it interesting for me on this Sunday?
Well, I could give you something super easy to do, which is just get some really good quality dark chocolate and just melt it. So you can even just carefully do it in a microwave, just in 10 or 20 second increments, and just stir it in between till it's nice and melted.
Okay.
Pour it out over some baking paper with some nuts, whatever your favorite nuts are, maybe some peanuts, hazelnuts,
sure.
A little tiny sprinkle of salt and a bit of chili.
The chili.
Yeah, pop in some chili
and
just let it set. You could sprinkle some coconut over it, whatever you like.
Tell me about the chili, though, because now when you say chili, for me, my brain goes into all different spaces. There's chili powder, there's chili flakes, there's, you know, a whole green chili. What are we talking about?
Oh, so I love Turkish chili flakes, but any, you know, you could just crush up a bit of dried chili. I like the sort of warm chilies that don't blow your head off, but it's chili so personal. So if you like a really hot chili powder, you could just sprinkle that in. Mm. Not too much. I mean, I say to, you know, it's when I do cooking classes, sometimes I say to the mums, you know, it's just enough to keep the kids away. So just spice it up a little bit. But dark chocolate and chili are very good friends. They love hanging out together.
Interesting. Well, I'm talking to Danny Valent, who's a writer, eater, and cook, and you can check her out on dannyvalent.com. Danny, if you'd like, I would like you to stick around. We've got a song now, but I want to talk to you about food lists that we see on websites and how reliable they are. I'm here with writer, cook, and eater, and chocolate fanatic, Danny Valent. We're talking all things chocolate because it's World Chocolate Day this July the 7th. Now, Danny, we have a text that's come in that says from someone who said, I mean, I'm almost... sad to even read this out, but they've gone, what does one do if they don't like chocolate? I can't stand the stuff and the smell is so off-putting. Now, what on earth is happening there? I've never heard anyone be off-put by the smell of chocolate.
You know what? You know what I think?
Mm.
I think more chocolate for me.
So you don't care about other people not appreciating chocolate that much, because as long as you can get some more of your own.
I don't know. I'm not the kind of person that tries to force people into liking food. I mean, except for my kids, obviously. But
what's the type of food that your kids don't like that you wish they got more on board of? Like, taking the healthy stuff out. Obviously, you want your kids to eat healthily. But
do I wish they would eat more chocolate? No.
Is there something that you appreciate and you wish that they really got on board with?
I don't know. Stinky cheese. But that'll come.
Yeah,
that'll
course,
come. I don't mind. If it's a food that I like, just, yeah, to me, it's just more for me. But, yeah, so I guess if someone doesn't like chocolate, I think a lot of those things, it's almost genetic. It's like their taste buds and their brain doesn't compute in a pleasurable way. And I don't think there's any point trying to rewire that as long as everyone's basically healthy and eating a well-rounded diet, right. It's fine. If you don't like something, that's okay.
Speaking of genetics, is there any truth to the idea that coriander has that effect on some people?
I've heard that. So some people just taste it in a really, it just, you know, pushes all the disgusting buttons.
Yeah.
And sometimes those things, you know, I guess, you know, we are wired to not like things that are bad for us.
Right.
And
like poison.
Exactly. Like poison. And to some people's bodies, maybe coriander is a little bit of a poison.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We are talking a lot about food here. And recently the list of the world's best, 50 best restaurants in the world has come out. And sadly, not a single Australian restaurant has made the cut.
Yeah, I don't know. How sad is it really though, Dilruk? I mean, it's a funny one. Lists are funny, aren't they? Because who decides what goes on these lists?
Well, this is what I want to ask you, because in my work as a stand-up, I tend to travel a fair bit. And as soon as I land in a new town, I will always Google, you know, best pasta, best pizza, whatever it is that I'm looking for in that moment.
Yeah.
And I tend to trust the lists that are out there. But how reliable are these lists? What goes into piling up, say, for example, the best pastas in Melbourne?
Oh, look, there are so many different people writing about food these days and compiling lists, and there are a lot of different criteria at play. So, I mean, if we talk about the world's 50 best, this is an international list that started. It was born out of a magazine in London that started it originally. And this list has got 1,000 different jurors, and they're mixed up. They're a mix of chefs, food writers, and influencers, quote unquote. So each of these people votes for 10 restaurants around the world, and they have to vote for some restaurants that are out of their geographical area.
Right.
But the skew naturally is away from Australia, because fewer people come to Australia than other places.
Of course.
So Australia hosted the World's 50 Best Awards a couple of years ago. And
yeah,
it cost
us a fair bit as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so I think Tourism Australia paid $800,000 to host the awards, but then there was all the collateral expenses of flying over journalists and influencers and getting people basically into our restaurants so they would hopefully vote for them come the next round. This obviously hasn't had a lasting effect. So which was the restaurant that the Australian restaurant that was in the top 50 last year, it was actually sitting at number 20, which is pretty high. In the last the announcement of the most recent list, it dropped to 84. So you could go, oh my goodness,
is it terrible now? But it's not.
Well, look, I also...
As in the sense that it's just more of a biased... Not biased, but there's just a weighting that goes into the voting system.
There's a natural weighting. And the people voting on this list don't have to say why they're voting for a certain restaurant. It's pretty... I don't know. Lists are a very blunt instrument. Obviously, they don't tell the whole story. They don't really pretend to. It's just an interesting guide to restaurants around the world. I suppose we're all traveling a lot these days and we want to know where to eat. I hate that concept of the wasted meal. Like when you're traveling, don't you just hate it when you have a bad dinner? It's like,
oh yeah,
I wasted that night.
This
I could have had a good dinner.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to have a second dinner just to get over that bad first dinner.
Duke, this is going to anger some people, but when I was in Hong Kong last year, if there was a meal that I would research and try and go and have it, and if I didn't like it, I would just walk away from it. I know it's not very sustainable, and we will be talking about food wastage in the next hour, and we're having some experts in, and they're going to hate me for saying that. But it's true. I feel like this was like, I was only there for like 5 days.
Yeah.
And each meal is so valuable to me because I love my food. But then is there, what do you think is the safest bet then for a traveler? Is it just online reviews by the public? Or?
I think, you know, as we were talking earlier, you know, food is so personal. So I think the best recommendation are from people that you know are aligned with you in terms of what you like about food. So do you, I don't know, are you just all about the thinnest dumpling skins and the juiciest dumpling? Then you need to talk to your friend that loves dumplings in the same way that you do. So I think it's those personal recommendations that are so valuable. And it might not be a friend, it might be someone that you follow on social media whose opinion you respect. It might be that list, but it's about understanding that list or any list and working out what its particular skew is.
Right. So like just with any other art form, you just find someone that you agree with and then see what else they have, you know, extrapolate from there and see what else they like.
I think so. And also just be a bit adventurous and, you know, just put it all away. Go to the place that looks the busiest and where the people look the happiest.
They were talking to Danny Vallette, writer, eater, and cook, dannyvallette.com. Thank you so much for joining us.